3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to the Baseball Bro Show. We're going to talk about the umpires and how horrible they've been. Some hot hitters in the week. Some slow starts from some studs. That was a lot of S's. And much, much more. I'm back here with Chase. Chase is back from his illness. How are you feeling, Chase?
You know, I went from my illness. Now I have a kink neck. So it's really not much better. But at least I'm not coughing every 5 seconds so I can actually speak.
When it rains, it pours. Well, that's just great. So what do you want to talk about first, Chase? You want to talk about these umpires?
Yeah, let's talk about these umpires, man. These one of them, particular in my mind, that is just mind-blowing is Angel Hernandez.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts, Cameron, on Angel Hernandez missing 3 pitches in a row to a rookie, Wyatt Langford, way off the plate?
And late in the game, too. It was in a big moment. The Rangers were, right? Wasn't it like in the 9th inning or something?
I don't know if it was... I don't know if it was a big moment, but it was late in the game.
And there were some guys on base. And you got a rookie up there. He's trying to get acquainted, get kind of used to MLB zones, you know, MLB umpires. And Angel Hernandez, man, what an entertaining umpire, because we just love to roast him on the internet. Blows it with 3 straight pitches on the outside corner off the plate. Way off the plate. Like,
way off,
clearly
not even
off
close.
The plate. Now, obviously, this is not good for baseball. If you build distrust in the strike zone with your MLB players, you're not going to get the best performances from both the pitchers and the hitters. And these guys, you know, have been playing the game for so long. They know the strike zone without even like opening their eyes. They know exactly where that thing is, you know? And when they're getting upset, you know, there's a problem. But the problem with the MLB is that they can't get rid of this guy. He's tenured. It's like nearly impossible for these umpires that struggle to get laid off because they're so protected. And I mean, for good reason, because if they weren't, then there could be some conspiracy where it's like, let's get rid of this umpire because he's calling too good of games and slip this guy in so we can start rigging some right. contests. But I mean,
do you think that has a... like a play in Vegas where the Rangers are maybe getting a lot of the money from the public to where Angel Hernandez got a call from MLB and saying, hey, you got to blow some calls here.
Do you think Angel Hernandez is just on some sort of bookie's payroll right now? Just freaking.
I mean, it wouldn't be him betting. It would be somebody telling him to blow. That's the conspiracy theory that people have sometimes is Vegas never loses, right?
You think Otani's translator's hitting up Angel Hernandez?
Yeah, he's like, yo, I'm $4 million in debt to my best friend.
I don't know if you saw the news. I just lost my job.
Word came out, I'm $40 million in debt, and that is accurate indeed.
Holy smokes, dude. I think umpires have a hard job. I do think, though, that there are good umpires, which means it is possible for umpires to make the right calls 99% of the time. Angel Hernandez has proven over and over again that he can't make the correct calls. And the fact that he's still umpiring behind the plate is kind of ridiculous.
So let me ask you this, though, because you played in college.
Mm-hmm.
When you got a guy like Angel Hernandez, now I'm not defending him at all in any sorts.
Yeah.
But there was 3 pitches, pretty similar. One was way off the plate, but they were all off the plate on the outside corner.
Yeah.
Now, as a rookie hitter, you know he's calling that a strike. So is there an adjustment in your approach when you got a ball off the plate so significantly, but he's calling it a strike to where you're like, okay, I got to maybe protect the outside here because he's going to be calling that a strike?
Yeah, no, that's a great point because like that's literally what will happen is usually the pitcher earns that corner, right? Like the pitcher's darting that outside part of the plate on the black every time consistently. And then the umpire will kind of give him maybe like an inch or two if he misses outside because he sort of earned that right to live in that area and get that call to strike. Now, in this case, I wasn't familiar with the entire game, so I'm not sure how he was doing consistently like as far as like calling those outside pitches. but it seems like that first one wasn't even close to the zone in general, which made it laughable that the other two were also called strikes, because it was just clear that he just...
Well, the third one, the one he got punched out on, was the worst one.
It was even more off.
Yeah.
So as a hitter, like, when you're playing at a college level, at least, you do have to make that adjustment. But like at a big league level, you should expect the umpire to, like, I don't know, maybe the first time, like, okay, I could see how you can maybe think that's a strike. The second time, that's a little bit outside, bro, but like, don't do it again. And then stay on that same plan of just like
hoping he doesn't call it a strike.
Exactly. Just like if it's not in my zone, I've trained my whole life to do this, and I'm not going to swing at balls. I'm just going to swing at strikes. Because those were three, like, off-speed curveballs, right? Like, or sliders.
Cutters or sliders.
Yeah, they had outside movement. So they started on the outside corner, and then they fished off.
Yeah.
So that's like a chase pitch that they're going for. They're trying to get that swing and miss. So as a hitter, you're not trying... If you see spin outside, like, especially if the guy has a mid-90s fastball that he can run up inside you, like... Inside you, sorry. You can run up on you, right? Like, you can't be, you got to be spitting on spin outside. Like, that's not a pitch you're swinging at. So he did the right thing. I don't think you have to make that adjustment because the umpire is garbage. Now, like, at this, I just feel like it shouldn't be accepted. I think the MLB needs to take a little bit further action than just banning him from the playoffs, because it ruins the game, and it also, like, gives those guys who want robot umpires another reason to push for robot umpires.
Right.
And I personally will, like, protest robot umpires.
Do you think that performances like that are going to drive robot umpires to MLB quicker? Because obviously, you know, they're in double A.
Yes.
You've seen it with, I'm sure a lot of you've seen Paul Skeens.
Yeah.
Have two calls in one game where he challenged and got them both right. Like, pitchers know the strike zone almost better than umpires do at this point, right? So is it good for baseball that umpires are controlled by technology?
No, I don't think so. I think that the challenge is good. I think that would be good, especially if you do it quick, right? But I don't feel like the fun of the game, right? There still has to be like
the human aspect
of it. Yeah, that, like, you have someone to root for, root against. Like, there's that like authenticity that you lose when you lose the umpire's decision to make a call. Like, for instance, I really liked that if you're dotting the lower half, right, as a pitcher the whole game, and then you just come a little under, like, that umpire is going to give you that pitch. And it's sort of like a strategy as a hitter, like, oh, he's staying low, so, like, I gotta go for one when it's low. I like that aspect. And not to say, I know it's kind of counterintuitive, because I just said how he shouldn't have changed his approach because those were three clearly balls on the outside part of the plate. But hitters do have to change their approach if it falls within reason. If it is, like, the dude's just dotting the outside corner, and then it comes, like, maybe a ball outside, and he gives it as a strike. Like, that's something that we go back to the dugout and tell the guys, like, hey, he's given the outside corner, but at least he's consistent. So maybe get a little bit on the plate and poke it to the right side of the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the game. Like, obviously, it's annoying and frustrating as a hitter to see a called strike there. But at the same time, you got to adjust. You got to realize that this is the umpire the rest of the game.
Yeah.
So you got to adjust to what he's calling strikes and balls, no matter what.
In an age of, like, where we want to move digital, where we want to move AI, where we want to move to, like, this sort of perfection, like, the imperfection is what we hold on to. It's the reason why people shoot on, like, cassette tapes. It's the reason why people like to see movies in film. It's the reason why people still buy art that's painted on canvas. It's because we still want that sort of human authenticity, and I feel like that translates with umpires still. So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Keep the human umpire, but, like, let's weed out some of these guys that can't call games and are blowing it.
I mean, because there are good umpires out there.
There are
umpires that are really consistent with their strike calling, or if it's off the plate just a little bit, they're consistent with those strikes.
And I'm not inhuman. Like, I want Angel Hernandez to still have a job, you know? Like, he worked hard to get to the MLB level to be able to call games. But, like, let's put him at first base, you know?
Yeah. Put him somewhere else besides behind the plate.
Yeah, we don't need him calling games. Just put him at first base. Put him in right field.
Umpires have their own strengths, whether it's calling foul balls, fair balls, safes, or outs at the bag. It sounds like Angel Hernandez, or it looks like Angel Hernandez, should never be behind the plate.
Just put him at third. There's not a lot of plays at third. You know, maybe first base, he'll blow one, like, where it's a half step. At least you could challenge that.
You could challenge those. be more accurate, those calls.
Put him in a position where you can challenge that, man. I mean, that's what I got. You got anything on that?
No, I think we've pretty much touched all the points on that. And
yeah.
Some things that could follow into that as far as, like, you know, the AI strike zone that we're talking about in the minors.
Yeah.
That could come just because of a couple umpires that fail to make calls.
But I like having the option to challenge one pitch, like, a couple times. I don't want it to be where they were doing the headset, and then they would get the pitch, wait a little bit, strike, wait a little bit, ball.
No, the way they have it set up is perfect, where it's, like, literally 5 seconds later, they know it's a strike or a ball, like, right there and then.
I think that's fine, because everyone makes a mistake at least once.
That's like the tennis challenge, where it hits the line or not, out or in.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, where it's just, like, 5 seconds later.
Yeah.
Yeah, chilling. So I don't mind it. I mean, it's better. I mean, if everyone wants to lose or win fairly, right? Yeah. And that could be a way that could happen. Yeah. So,
I mean, it has to be within reason, though. Like, there can't be, like, a challenge every pitch, you know? So, like, you need to have, like, a limit on that thing, like, two or three. Save them up, right? Like,
one an inning or one a...
One a, two a game.
That's, two a game,
two a game is, I feel like, absurdly fair.
Yeah.
And at least it won't ruin the momentum.
Because there are some counts where it's, like, a one and two count with bases loaded. They miss a call.
Yeah.
That's bigger than just, like, an 0-0 count first pitch of the game.
Leading off.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. Use it when it's worth it. And
exactly. And that would offer, like, a new element to the game where it's, like, strategic when you use your
challenges.
Your challenge, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on, right? We talked last week. You weren't here, unfortunately. The other Chase had, like, a couple cool things to say about this. But we talked about guys who had really hot starts that weren't expected to do great. Young guys, new to the league, maybe like a year or two deep, and what was that mentality behind having a hot start? Like, do you have to reset yourself? Like, try not to get carried away with it. Like, do you talk to that guy? Do you leave him alone? You know. Mm-hmm. Now we're gonna talk about some guys that should be having good starts, that are promising players in the league, but are not. And the two that we have pulled up are Julio Rodriguez and Francisco Lindor.
Right.
And what I'm thinking we talk about, since, you know, we can't really get in the minds of someone who's struggling in the MLB, let's talk about as a fantasy owner. If you have Julio Rodriguez, if you have Francisco Lindor on your team, we're week two and a half-ish. You know, that weird first week was kind of like a wash. So most people are within 2 weeks now in their fantasy leagues going into week three.
It's a longer slump than... Like, it's a more concerning slump now because it's been long enough.
It's kind of getting to that point where it might be a little problem. Julio Rodriguez, just for a refresher, is hitting 186. No home runs, two stolen bases. That's kind of the redeeming aspect of it. 59 at-bats. Whereas Francisco Lindor, who is a little more mature, I think he's like 30. Yeah, he's 30 years old. He's hitting 129 with a jack, two RBIs, no stolen bases, and only 8 hits in 62 at-bats. So not great starts from either of those guys. Julio Rodriguez, he's only 23 years old. He's known for having slow starts in the season. Francisco Lindor really hasn't had an amazing MVP-type year since being on the Mets. I mean, he was 30-30 last year. But kind of concerning, considering there was a lot of hype going into both these players, and they're both first round draft picks in most fantasy leagues. So
close to it, at least first or second round.
Yeah, I mean, Julio was like, I think he went like fourth overall in our league. Francisco, maybe a second rounder, early second rounder, late first rounder. What do you say, like, as a fantasy owner, do you hold him out for longer? Do you see it through, or do you start trying to package them into a deal to try to recover on your investment here?
Yeah, so I think even though we're talking about it being 2 weeks now and it's more established slump, I still don't think it's long enough to give up on these guys. Plus, you invested so much in him. You drafted him first and second round. That has to have value already as it is. So, in my opinion, Julio Rodriguez and Francisco Lindor are not being moved on my team.
Yeah.
They're staying put. I'm open to see if some guys want to offer trades, but I'm not going to go out of my way to offer trades. And I'm also not going to sell low. So if somebody tries to lowball me for them, I'm not going to give... I'm going to keep him as a first and second round value as a trade option.
The value hasn't gone down.
No, the value hasn't gone down.
But let me pop this on your plate. If Francisco Lindor, a tasty offer of like a couple guys mid-round for a one Francisco Lindor, are you taking that?
So it depends where my team's at, right? So if I have a lot of struggling guys and I need to make a move, then I'm probably going to take it.
Yeah.
However, if my team is doing good and Lindor is one of my few weak spots, there's no point in me to add more bulk or more depth into my team.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of hoping that he will get into his form.
Ride it out.
Right, and just let my guys continue to carry the rest of these guys like Lindor and Julio.
Yeah.
However, I'm seeing a couple... I'll let you answer this question, and I'll ask you one of my own. But what would you do in this situation?
Oh, okay. So I am a big believer in just holding on to guys. So I definitely hold it out, see how they, you know, how they respond in the next couple weeks. The next question I had, though, is like, when do you give up on somebody? Like, when is enough enough? And I know the answer is different for different players. Like, the leash is a bit longer for the studs and a little bit shorter for those fringe players. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to your first five round picks, like your top five picks in the draft, like what's that leash look like?
Yeah, for me, the leash is when I'm 0-4, 0-5, right? Like we need to make a change.
Yeah.
So
for it's me, not even performance based. It's literally
it's your team. You just you're always banking on your first and second round, like these guys, to eventually pick it up, right?
Yeah.
And we've seen it with Julio in the past. He's had a rough start last year. He went crazy in the summer. Right,
yeah,
and then was great to the rest of the year. Lindor was kind of off and on throughout the last year, so we've seen both these guys slump.
Yeah,
it's not out of the ordinary. However, to be a first and second round pick, it is a little bit concerning because you just would hope guys like them would get off the gates quickly and you know not struggle at all. But yeah, so I think for me, it's not necessarily performance; it's more of where my team is at as a whole. If I deal with them or not, because I know I can get value out of them. It's just sometimes I might have to take a little bit of a hit because you got to make the playoffs in fantasy to win, right?
Yeah, and so you got to get there.
You got to get there. So that's the thing is, it just depends.
This is kind of a sneak question. We didn't talk about this before the show, so we're probably not that prepared. But something that I'm struggling with right now is dealing with a bunch of injuries, a bunch of guys that are shelved. The lows, all three lows in the MLB are injured. I don't know if you saw that, but they're, you know, obviously different skill sets or different skill levels.
Yeah.
I got Tommy Edman on the injured list. I have Walker Buehler who's coming back, and I just got Luis Robert Jr. who just landed on my shelf.
Yeah.
Bobby Miller just went down. There's a lot of guys who go down, and they have like 1 month, maybe 4 to 6 week timeframes, timetables. Yeah. What do you think your value is for a guy who's on the injured list if you're trying to dump him or you're trying to get him? And then what do you think should be the value if you feel like, you know, in our league, no one's valuing injured list players until they're like ready to come back within a couple days.
They don't want them into, because the thing is with injuries is these are projections of them coming back.
Yeah.
They could have a rehab start. They could re-injure themselves.
Yeah.
Right? So you're never secured to come back until when they actually do come back. But with injured players, I value them. Once again, this is also based on my performance of my team.
Yeah.
So if I need them to come back, I'll make a move.
Hmm.
I'll trade them away, get someone who's healthy, someone who's better right now for me because I'm struggling as a team.
Yeah.
But if my team's doing fine, like, there's really, like, I'm playing for the playoffs, right? Yeah. So I know when this guy comes back, I'm going to be a better team in the playoffs because I know my team can hold its own right now. Yeah. So that's kind of, I mean, obviously in our league, we have two IL spots. So if you got, let's say, six guys in the IL.
That's rough.
That's a lot of occupancy that maybe we might want to dish one of those guys away just to fill the roster.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a lot. But if you got like three or four, like for me, that's where I'm at right now. I have four guys who are on the IL. Two of them are coming back shortly. I'm kind of holding put.
Yeah.
I'm holding put. I'm just going to play it out. Let the team do its thing. We're obviously only 2 weeks into fantasy. I think we're both 1-1 now.
Yeah.
So we're at that spot where it's like, okay, it's early. Let's just let it go.
Yeah. But I'm like not making a move until like at least 1 month. That's kind of like once I get through four or five games, I feel like I can start figuring out like because there's still so much room on the waiver wire for one of us to make a significant pickup who can stay on the team for the rest of the year and be like a top 100 player.
Yeah.
Those guys happen and pop up all the time.
You just gotta be ready. You gotta know when.
Yeah,
that's it.
Like my guy Meyer on the Marlins picked him up, and he just had a
little prosp,
really, really impressive start. In his last start,
the Marlins have so many young arms; it's actually insane.
Yeah, Max Meyer just give you a little, a little stat update. Didn't have this prepped, but whatever. We'll do it. His last seven games, he's 2-0 with a 2.12 ERA, 14 Ks, and a 0.82 WHIP. 17 innings pitched. That'll do it. Let me say.
You know what's funny? The Marlins are 3-13, and he's 2-0.
That's wild, dude.
Yikes. That's a big yikes.
That's a big yikes.
So you got the offense working with him on the bump, huh?
Jeez. Yeah, I guess. One
of the few days.
Or just, you know, the freaking rest of the rotation can't hold a lead.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things wrong with
the Marlins. It could be, yeah.
It's a long season.
So. But I picked that guy off the freaking wire, in the beginning of the year. And that's because no one thought he was going to make the MLB because of all the studs in the rotation, and they all got injured.
So that's the thing. Like fries. Is he going to stay in that rotation with Edward Cabrera? You got Braxton Garrett coming back.
Bro, is he going to stay in that rotation?
I mean, I think he will, but he's 2-0. Who's gone? Who's going? You got Lizardo?
I don't know. They'll figure one. They'll drop whoever's not performing. He's not going anywhere.
Or just put him in the bullpen.
He's 25. Why would they put him in the bullpen? He's 25 years
not
old.
Not him, but just whoever's not performing.
Yeah, that's true. That's facts. As like a long relief
Ryan
guy or
Weathers
something.
Will get out. Ryan Weathers is a... terrible. That guy's terrible. Let me ask you one question before we move on to the pitchers.
Go for it.
So you got a guy. This is interesting because I just saw this. Lindor is only K'd seven times.
Yeah.
68 at-bats.
Okay.
Right? There is a struggle to where you're striking out a lot and you're not putting the ball in play. Mm-hmm. Right? You're just not seeing the ball. Seven times in 68 at-bats is not that much.
No.
Julio Rodriguez, on the other hand, 21 Ks
Jeez.
And 63 at-bats. That's a 33% K rate.
That's horrible.
That's a little scary because he's not seeing the ball out of the hand. And he has obviously struck out a lot in the past, 175 times last year, 145 times in his rookie year. It's not an uncommon thing for him to strike out. But that is a little bit more concerning of a slump to see a guy strike out that much more.
Yeah, but Julio Rodriguez has more hits than Francisco Lindor. Francisco Lindor has 8 hits in 62 at-bats. And I mean, this is not much better. 11 hits in 59 at-bats, but 8 hits in 60. That's a 129 batting average. There was a point
I got him at 103 batting average.
Oh, really? Maybe updated. Yeah. Well, there was a point where he was hitting like 89 on the year. Like, it was recent that he got up to 129. Like, let's see, like, his day-by-day. Let's see if I can pop that up. 1 second. Because he literally, like, his last, let's see, last couple games. Yeah, 2-for-4 on April 14th. 1-for-3, 1-for-6, 1-for-5, and then 2-for-5.
So but it seems like he's coming around then.
Bro, before that...
Seems like he's coming around. Seems like we waited long enough to see him come around here
eventually. Bro, he was literally at one point in the season, he was hitting 32.
Yeah, that's pretty...
32.
That, I mean...
0.032.
Chris Taylor, too. I mean, Chris Taylor's not nearly as good as Lindor.
This is like one of the highest paid shortstops in the league.
Yeah.
Hitting 32. So, I mean, that's concerning in my opinion. Like, that's something that you shouldn't take lightly for sure. But the strikeout thing is, I mean, I don't really mind strikeouts because I feel like with strikeouts, you're like, you're taking chances. You're swinging harder and you're trying to get the
hitting,
long ball.
That's if you're hitting home runs. So if Julio Rodriguez had 4 home runs,
that would admit, yeah,
that's different.
Yeah. Right?
He only has
He has zero. Yeah.
Right. So yeah. What chances are we taking here?
That's true. That's a good point. I mean, the real thing would be we would just have to watch all of his at bats to really digest what it is, and we just simply don't have that time.
No.
So we really can't say with certainty, but that is a good indication of whether you're seeing the ball well or not, is how many strikeouts you have. But with Lindor, it's just like I would go on record, like I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would say that most of his contact is probably weak. It's not all hard contact.
I'm sure. I mean,
because after 69 at-bats or however many at-bats he had, like you would hope that he would have a higher batting average than 129. 62 at-bats you should be having. If you're doing hard contact, that should be low twos. It'd be 222 or 201, unless you're just like a freak accident where it's just like every single thing you hit is just line drive short, line drive second, line drive center, like that. But that, I just never seen anything like that before, so there's no way.
Let's quickly jump into the pitchers who are struggling to start the year. We won't take as much time in this, but Kevin Gausman, one of them, 11.57 ERA in 3 starts, 9 1/3 innings pitch, 12 earned runs, only 10 strikeouts. Now this guy's came off a Cy Young third voting last year.
Yeah.
237 strikeouts last year in 185 innings.
Mm-hmm.
Is this concerning for you as a fantasy owner? Yes or no?
No, and the reason why is because the Blue Jays are just kind of plagued right now.
Okay.
I just don't think they're playing their best as a unit, as a team. I think some of their studs are suffering because of it. And once they get it together, once they start rolling, then I think the ball is going to find its hole, you know what I'm saying? Golf reference, right?
Hole.
I honestly should have been watching some of Gausman's last couple starts to prepare for my commentary on this. I don't know too much about how he's handling it, but he's got 10 strikeouts, you know? He's giving up a lot of hits.
That's only one in inning, though. 9 1/3 innings.
Yeah, I mean, one in inning is better than most people. Like, that would be concerning if he wasn't finding whiffs.
But this guy struck out 237 in 185 innings last year.
I know, but he has 3 starts and he's averaging 3 innings a start because he's just getting shelled, right? And
I'm concerned.
You are?
I am.
Really?
I think this is very concerning because Gausman has never, he's had bad years in his early career.
Yeah.
And he turned it around right when he went to San Francisco. That's kind of when he started to pitch well.
Okay.
So I'm concerned. I think that he won't have keep this up where he just gets shelled every outing, but he's definitely not going to be like a top 10 guy in the AL.
I would be concerned if he didn't have an excellent year for the Blue Jays last year. Like if he was new to the Blue Jays after having a great year on San Francisco and he just can't pitch in Toronto. Yeah. That would be concerning to me. But, like, what's changed for Gausman between last year and this year?
Pitch clock.
He's 33. He had the pitch clock that he dealt with last year. It's not like an Alec Manoah thing.
I don't know. I think I'm just saying.
Are people like, just used to him now? Like, are people, like, timing him up?
Could be.
He's just not fooling anyone?
Is velocity down? I don't know.
I don't know. Let's check it out. Okay, you talk about the second guy.
Yeah, so the second guy is George Kirby, the Mariners. I'm not as concerned for this guy. I think he's only pitched 2 years prior, both good years, just above 3 ERA. Strikeout rate isn't that good, but he's really good at getting soft contact. Last year, he was Cy Young, 8th voting. Right now, he has an 8.16 ERA and only 13 strikeouts in 14 1/3 innings.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's just a little bit off in his command, and that's what he usually relies on to get outs. So I'm really more on the fence of once he figured out his command, I think he'll settle in and be fine. Mariners also kind of that same boat as the Blue Jays, where they're not really finding their groove yet. The AL West really is looking pretty bad.
Yeah.
For having such good talent.
AL West?
AL West.
Oh. Why? Just because they're not performing?
You know, there's no pitching in that division. The only good pitching is the Mariners.
I love that the Angels are, second place right now. That's
Angels
kinda,
are, yeah.
That's kind of funny.
A little sneaky second.
Sneaky second. Astros in the tank.
I don't know how long they're going to be there for, but.
Yeah, we'll see. Let's go over Kevin Gausman's last three starts. So his first one was against Tampa Bay. Second one, Yankees. Third one, Colorado at home. So the Colorado start giving up 10 hits, 6 earned runs after 3 2/3 of an inning.
See, that's not concerning you. That's giving up concerned. 6 runs that's at home concerned. Against Colorado.
That is bad. That is not good. But his first two starts were on the road against two really good teams.
Okay.
So that's a caveat, right? The second one was against the Yankees, in which he only lasted 1.1 innings and gave up 5 earned runs, 2 home runs. That's a stacked lineup, you know? Mm-hmm. That's kind of hard to get through. I just read this article here, CBS Fantasy. His average fastball is back up to 93.9, which is about the same it's been. Yeah. So that's good. I think it's a confidence thing. And unless he can get it together, which I think he would, like he just needs one or two good starts under his belt against some bad teams just to get back into that confidence level, we can see similar results last year. It doesn't seem like an injury. It doesn't seem like there's any external factors affecting him, unless he liked it. Maybe he had a baby or something that kind of sucks the energy out of you.
I think we would have known.
Yeah, I feel like that would have been
it. Some kind of article on that. But
yeah,
what do you think about George Kirby? Do you think he's on the same boat where you should be fine about him? No,
I mean,
no worries.
I don't know. I mean, I don't really know George Kirby that well, but let me just that's what I'm gonna say.
2 years.
Let me do a quick assessment. Well, he plays for Seattle, and Seattle is just so far out of the baseball community for some reason. In my mind, hopefully, no one from Seattle.
Got two Seattle guys on here, by the way. Sorry, Seattle fans. Yeah. You got to get your stars together.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, let's see what his last three games were, because I think that plays a big difference. You know, his first game was against Boston at home.
Good. It was a good
was
start.
It was a good start. Really good start, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Second one against Cleveland at home, and that's where the wheels kind of fell off. Mm-hmm. 10 hits, 8 earned runs. Then the third was at Toronto, ironically, where, you know, 5 earned runs. Not as bad as Gausman. You know, he's not really. I don't think there's much concern here, too, with Kirby. I wish I knew a little bit more about him as a pitcher to really comment on, like, whether, you know, what could be the issue or what's going on. I think maybe it's another team thing. I mean, the Mariners are fourth place in their division, just above the Astros. They're not getting it done.
If you watch Kirby highlights, you'll notice that he relies on a command a lot. He has good stuff, but his command is everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's just what's missing right now for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of like a thing where, you know, you either have it or you don't that day. You either are finding the spots.
Or that week or that month.
Yeah.
Right?
True. Yeah, because, like, that's a finesse thing. That's a talent thing. That's not just natural. That's not just going out there and throwing as hard as you can. That's, like, poking it right where you need to.
That's, like, hitting 5-footers consistently in golf rather than, you know, having that little hitch in that stroke.
Yeah.
You have the talent to do it. You know you can do it, but it's just mental.
Yeah.
You know, or having that just a little bit off of the mechanics.
It's like a small guy hitting home runs. You know, you need to just time up timing needs to be on for every at-bat.
It's true.
Because you don't have that brute strength to just get a hold of one and barely have to, like, make good contact for it to go over the fence, like a Judge or a Stanton. It's like a Mookie Betts, you know?
Right.
That's a little more tough. I don't think he bounces back as quick as a Gausman. I think Gausman needs just one good start and then he's right back in there. With Kirby, I feel like it's more of a finesse thing. If that's the case and he's just not controlling, he's not hitting his spots. But, you know, I'm not a pitcher.
Yeah.
I'm a hitter. That's kind of what I did.
We can only make so many assumptions.
We can only make so many assumptions.
These slumps and everything. So
we can only talk.
We'll see what happens.
So much about what we don't know, I guess.
let's talk about the top five hitters of the week.
Yeah,
and you know, change the sorrows into happiness, right?
Yeah, I think this is a good segment because it kind of like refreshes everyone on like what happened this week. Who's kind of hot right now?
And I'll start it. I got Pete Alonso as being one of the hotter hitters of the week. Four jacks, batting .429, getting on base 56% of the time. So he's also walking at the plate. And for Pete Alonso, only striking out five times is actually pretty good. So I think he's one of the hottest hitters of the week. Who do you got?
Well, I got Ellie De La Cruz, who's been just all the hype this week. He has a .320 average, four home runs, three bags, seven RBIs, eight runs, slugging .840. The guy can do it all. He's legitimately a five-tool player, and he is making it apparent that last year's slump, when he ended the year, that's not going to happen this year. Who's your next guy?
I got one of our spring breakouts, Colton Cowser, on the Baltimore Orioles. This guy's getting overlooked as a prospect because you got so many of them on the Orioles, but he's been raking 12 ribbies in six games.
Dang.
.435 average, four jacks, also swiped two bags. Another guy who honestly could fit right into that outfield and slide right up to the top of the order eventually. I mean, you got guys like Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman, and those guys are going to fill up the top, but he can go in that five hole, in that six hole. I could see that happening pretty soon. Who's your next one?
I got Bush League, Michael Bush, hitting .346 with four Jimmy Jacks, nine RBIs, and four runs, nine hits. I mean, the guy's mashing the ball. I like it. I like it. I think I'd love to see a former Dodger just come over and pop off on another team, as long as it's not against us.
Just like Bellinger did last year.
Yep. Okay. How many was that?
That's four. So I'll finish it off with Josh Naylor.
Nice.
This guy, just consistent throughout the week. Got a little power, three home runs, but really stands out, getting on base 58% of the time.
Yeah.
And only striking out four times. So
six walks, dude.
Slugging 1,000.
Six walks, which is, you know, quite impressive. I mean, only a handful of guys have him beat on that category for the week, and that's Christian Walker, Juan Soto, and Aaron Judge.
Speaking of Josh Naylor, did you see the sketch celebration when he's running around the bases? He was like, when he's running around the bases.
Stop it.
I swear.
Stop it.
I swear.
That's hilarious. Dude, that guy's taking over, bro.
Yeah.
I see him everywhere.
I know.
I don't even know what his thing is. Like, what is his thing?
He's just like, I don't know, man.
Does he just play? What does he play?
He plays Madden.
Oh, that's
he plays Madden. That's his thing.
Okay.
And he streams, and now he's just basically just a social media star. It's crazy how guys like him and other guys just become crazy on social media.
I love how like our society just latches on to like a thing and then just really squeezes it for everything that it is. You know, that guy did the
thing.
Yeah, what's up, brother? Just doing that. And then now like everyone's like
doing as celebrations.
Yeah, as celebrations, or they're doing it like, hey, do you know what's cool right now? And they'll like he'd be like, what's up, brother? They'll like go and talk to
people.
Have you seen that? Like social media interns doing that on sports teams?
I've seen it like when guys are getting on the plane to go to a road game.
Yeah.
Like, you guys.
Yeah. They'll be like, what's up, brother? And then the guys who know will be like, what's up, brother?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they'll do it.
Yeah. The guys who don't will be like, what's up? And they'll like try to like touch the finger or something.
It's honestly incredible what like entertainment is nowadays.
I know, dude. And it's this one guy who's just
either plays the part really well or just has a little bit on the spectrum.
He's got to be faking it, dude. Right?
You think?
I mean,
he said he's not like, there's nothing wrong with him. He doesn't have any like mental problems.
Yeah, but like he's playing up. I think he's playing up a little. I mean, I don't know. Frick. Am I going to get in trouble for saying that? I don't know. But
no.
I don't think enough people watch this to really care.
All right. Anyways, let's wrap this up and finish with our hot takes.
Okay, let's go for it. So what's the first one is the division standings.
Yeah,
they're,
you want to do that now?
Yeah, let's do that right now. Because they're a little, I mean, I wouldn't say atypical, but, you know, they're interesting.
A lot of recognizable teams.
A lot of recognizable teams, but a lot of teams that we might feel like could overtake those teams. So I'm going to just rapid fire you right now, right? And then you can hit me with the next one. American League, Yankees. No. There or no? No?
Orioles.
Orioles are going to creep up. Orioles
are going to come back.
Yankees are 12-4, Orioles 9-6. You think the Orioles are going
to... It's going to be a very tight race, but... I just see the Orioles are just going to continue to get better. The Yankees right now at their peak, they got a lot of injury-prone players, a lot of veterans. They can fall off just as easy as the Orioles can come up.
That's hilarious. Okay, American League Central is a tie right now, but the Guardians are edging. The Guardians, are they there or are they...
I had the Guardians to win the division, so I'm keeping them there.
Okay, yeah, I would agree. I think the Guardians are a lock for the Central. I don't know. I think I picked
I wouldn't
the
say they're a lock, but they're definitely, in my opinion... the most consistent team in the division. A lot like the Royals right now on an all-time high. Good for them. It's good to see them on top of the leaderboard. You got Bobby Witt carrying that team.
Oh, but, you have the Guardians. I have the Twins, dude. Actually, I have the Twins, and they're 6-8. And I just hate to see it, but yeah, I don't know. They're not looking great.
Yeah, I don't know about the Twins. I mean, they're not out of it. Obviously, it's so early, but
yeah.
I just think the Guardians will stay up there.
Yeah. Stephen Vogt. All right. American League West. The Rangers are in first place. Are they staying or are they dropping?
They're staying.
They're staying?
I think so.
Astros, last place, 6-11.
They're definitely not staying there.
Yeah. I think the
A's are 7-9.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I don't know about that.
Angels are 7-8. We'll see.
The American League West is all out of sorts.
It's all out of sorts, except for the Rangers being up top. That's the only correct position.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if they stay there. The Rangers.
It's a tough division. And like I said, it's not going to be a pull away, but I think they'll end up winning the division.
Okay. There's a lot of Astro players that aren't playing to their full potential right now that I feel like.
Oh, definitely.
That once they get it together, they'll get it together.
Yeah.
National League East, the Braves.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lock, right?
It's a lock.
Yeah. National League Central, the Brewers.
Now, the Brewers are really, they really surprised me a lot, just like the Pirates. Pirates are 11-5, Brewers 10-4.
It's that Christian Yelich, dude, I'm telling you.
I mean, not just Yelich. You got Jackson Chourio, who's a rookie, who's playing well.
Yeah.
You got a lot of starters who are playing well.
But it starts with one guy. And when you're freaking MVP.
He's the anchor. He's definitely the anchor.
When your MVP
team
is stepping up, everyone else steps up. That's what a lot of these teams that are struggling are missing. Just like that.
Yeah.
That momentum, you know? And that's surprising. I don't know if it's going to last. So I'm going to say no. I'm going to say that.
I got the Cubs winning that division.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, who do I have? I can't even remember.
You said the Reds.
Yeah, I still think the Reds.
Or maybe the Brewers, you said. I don't know.
I don't know. But anyways, I like the Pirates this year.
Yeah, they got a lot of young talent.
I do.
A lot of young talent. I don't know.
And they don't
even
have Skeens. That Skeens is still marinating.
He's got to come up soon, dude.
He's still marinating down there.
He's got too much of the big league like stuff.
He's got too much
and
juice.
And a demeanor.
He's so much
juice. And
he's
got a lot
nasty.
Of like a lot of like influence around him because of his dating situation.
Yeah, I don't even
LSU.
Care about that though.
But I'm just saying, like that sometimes like propels you. Just look at Justin Verlander, Kate Upton.
You remember
Kate Upton effect?
Yeah, that's true. But you remember when he faced Jackson Holliday in spring training? It was
and
a big deal.
Just carved him.
Carved him.
Carved him up.
Just carved him.
Yeah.
And he's up, and Skeens isn't. Yeah. Oh, we didn't even touch on Jackson Holliday. We can touch on that after. National League West.
Dodgers, yes.
Dodgers lock.
Yeah.
Easy.
Although,
uh-oh.
There is a lot of teams in this division, other than the Rockies, that I can see make a push throughout the year.
I'll tell you this much. The Giants shouldn't be 6-10.
No. They're going to finish over 500.
Yeah. They should be much better, and it's only a matter of time before they start making a push.
Diamondbacks, I don't know. I think it'll go Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Giants, Padres, Rockies.
Do you think Giants are third, Diamondbacks second?
Yeah.
Are you just riding a little World Series hype from
last
year?
No, I think their team is put together pretty well.
Uh-huh.
And they added a lot of pieces to it, like Luis Gurriel's breaking right now.
Yeah.
It's another guy we didn't really touch on. But and then you got they picked up Eugenio Suarez, Corbin Carroll struggling and they're still 8-8.
Yes.
Kettle Marte's, you know, they got a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Gowan.
That's true.
So I just think their roster is more talented than people think just because the Dodgers are overtaking that division.
And I just feel like maybe they overperformed last year just a smidge.
I think they did. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they're a World Series team like last year, but
yeah.
They're a wild card team that probably gets kicked out of the first round, right?
I guess,
out of the wild card. That's kind of how I see
just feel
that
like
team.
The Giants have like the pieces to be a really good team this year if they've just figured it out. They have the top two Cy Young contenders of last year on their team still like shoving, like still, and Blake Snell's like still in, he's kind of having like a spring training in the first three games.
Yeah.
He hasn't had a spring training. He got signed real late. Then you also got Matt Chapman, who's also having spring training in the first couple weeks because he got signed real late. Then you got the center fielder, who's a stud. That's a new signee from Korea. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Giants have pieces. They have pieces. You got returning players who can get the job done, who aren't performing as well as they did in years past. I feel like I just feel like the Giants are above the Diamondbacks. I think it's tight, though. I think it's close. Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, how I see it.
That's
though.
Up in the air for sure. Like I said, I think they're all going to make pushes this year.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Jackson Holliday to end the show. Holliday.
We have actually two more things to touch, but we'll go quick in this Jackson Holliday.
Well, we're pretty deep in time. Just to give you some context.
Well, he got his first hit today.
I know that.
He got his first day, but congratulations, before that, buddy. It took a couple at bats.
Yeah.
And this is kind of how we both predicted it to be.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, obviously, guy's talented. Can't deny that. Like, super talented. However, he is still young, and he's got to make that adjustment to the major league pitching over minor league pitching. He also has to make the adjustment of the nerves. You know, I don't think he's too nervous out there, but a lot of times when you're so hyped, like Gavin Lux, you try to overperform, and then you get yourself into this slump right away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not concerned. I think he's going to be fine. I think it's just going to take a couple months to where he really starts to figure out.
He's going
to
be fine for like this year. Like fine in a lot of people's opinions, like rookie of the year.
No.
He's not rookie of the year?
No. Evan Carter is my rookie of the year.
Okay. Well, I don't think he's going to be rookie of the year either. I just feel like, I don't know what it is. It's like he's got this baby face. Not that it's a bad looking face, just like he looks young, dude. And like his dad is probably one of the most jacked people on planet Earth who's ever played baseball. Like he's picking up, like I remember during a home run derby, like way back in the day, someone could find this clip. He was picking up this bat, this big bat, and he was making it look like a normal size bat.
Got the biggest hairless
guns,
forearms.
Dude. Guns, you know he's shaving
no
those
hair.
For him.
He's got no hair on him.
He's zero.
He's opposite of Pete Alonso.
He's a naked mole rat, dude.
It's crazy.
He's just a Greek god physique, dude. And his son isn't quite there yet, but you know he could be. You know he could be. And that's what lingers in my head. I'm like, give Jackson Holliday maybe two more years to really freaking beef up. Kind of like how Bryce Harper beefed up from like his rookie year. Remember that?
Yeah.
Like he
was really skinny.
He was really skinny when he broke in, and he wasn't quite ready. Yeah. He was also 20. And then he beefed up, and then he became a freaking legend.
Well, he was like more of a, almost like a base stealer. Like fast,
he was a scrappy arm, hustler, dude.
Got a lot of pop.
He was a scrappy hustler.
But then he turned into just like a power hitter.
Yeah, and that's literally, I think that's the perfect, that is literally the perfect comparison right now. It's Jackson Holliday is kind of the Bryce Harper treatment. Where I think it was Bryce Harper 19 or 20 when he broke in.
19.
He was 19, yeah. He's coming in a little too soon because he's super hyped up. And it's not a lot, it's not often that your first round pick is living up to the hype in the minors and is exciting and is son of a former MLB player. We saw that with Vlad Guerrero, you know.
He had the same, start where he just struggled right away, but then figured it out right away.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's going to be the same thing with Jackson. But
Vlad's a beefy guy. He's a bleefy. Yeah. He's a beefy.
He came
dude.
In the league how he is now.
Yeah, he's the same guy.
Jackson
Holliday
will probably adapt to it.
Jackson Holliday will get
adapt to the body
40,
changes.
50 pounds heavier and just look like
Corey
a roided out monkey. Yeah.
Look like Corey Seager probably. Not as tall, but big legs, big arms, right?
Yeah. He's not on roids, though. I want to retract that statement. But he'll look jacked. That's just genetics, you know?
Yeah, he's got his father's genes.
Yeah.
Anyways,
what are the other topics we were supposed to talk about?
I just want
to
talk about, I mean, every week I want to talk about one pickup player on fantasy
pitcher
and hitter under 20% owned in Yahoo leagues.
Okay.
So I'm going to take the one this week. You can go next week.
Yeah.
But my hitter is Brian De La Cruz on the Marlins.
All right.
This guy is coming off two good games. Hit a jack today, April 14th. Today, right?
Yeah.
April 14th. Hit a jack today. Marlins offense is also starting to pick it up a little bit as we go here. So I see him just a solid option in the outfield to pick up. He's 8% owned in Yahoo Leagues, so he should be available to a lot of people. And then as far as pitchers go, I have taken a little bit of risk on here on a bad team, Joe Boyle on the A's. This guy is coming off two good starts, struggled his first one, but he's got some up stuff in the fastball. He's owned in 7% of Yahoo Leagues. And
he'd be a good categories guy.
Yeah, be good. I mean, ERA, Ks,
yeah,
innings, whatever it is, WHIP. I think he's got good enough stuff to where you can give him a chance, maybe 1 week, or you know, make it a stream start if he pitches well. Keep him on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of one of those players. So
I like that. Those are good picks, dude. I like Brian De La Cruz. He hits missiles. That guy is built too.
Yeah,
27 years old. We call those guys the forgotten prospects. You know. Kind of
the Lewis Brinsons.
Yeah. Oh, not even Brinson, but you know what I mean? Like, who's like a good one?
Jerickson Profar.
Yeah. Jerickson Profar would be, yeah, that would be a great comparison right there. The guys who've kind of like fell out of that hype, newer, younger kids are coming up, and that's where everyone's focusing their attention on.
He
could do some big things. Like, I could see him hitting 30 this year.
I don't know about that, but
no?
I could see him, because he did hit 300 one year, I'm pretty sure, or close to it.
You don't think he hit 30 jacks this year? He hit 20 last year.
Yeah, I think he'll be right around there again, honestly. 20 jacks.
I could see him hit 30.
149 for 579, yeah.
Like the thing he like struggled with, I think, was injuries for the first two seasons, and then he had a full season last year.
Full-ish. Played 153 games, so yeah, almost full season. But
yeah, but that's like he got 9 games off, dude. Yeah. That's a full season.
No, I think he's worth a shot. I mean, if you're looking for an outfielder, at least if you have strong enough outfield, you need an infielder. Yeah. Don't bother, but you know, it's just something to keep your eyes open to.
I love it.
But anyways, good one, good podcast today. I'm good excited podcast. To be back.
Yeah, welcome back.
And looking forward to the rest of the MLB season. Yeah. Anything else you got?
No, that is it. Tune in next week, and I thought that went really well, man.
Yeah.
We were like tight.
We were tight with
it. We're freaking on it.
We knew what we needed to talk about and when we talk about
it. It's great when we could talk about the season because things are happening. Oh, you know?
So much more options. I'm sure we didn't touch a base on some of the things that happened this week, but
touch a base. Like, you know? I like how you phrased that
touch
one.
Touch base.
That's a baseball pun, everyone. That is a baseball pun. All right. 3, 2, 1. See you next week.